This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's 5 at 5 with Molly and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Molly Hall. 5 at 5 with Molly and Hall starts now.
What should be the theme of Tom Ricketts' message to the Cubs today in Arizona?
Well, words matter, and I think that when you're the chairman of the Cubs and you have gone through everything that your team has gone through in the last month or so, you have to realize the power of a message, and I think you can deliver a powerful one today. I think a couple things. You have three issues that you have to get to. I mean, you have to get through. You have to get through the Addison Russell situation because he spoke on Friday, and he is, you know, seeing him take infields like nothing ever happened and like normal is jarring to some people. And I think you have to address that. You have to address the Sinclair broadcast partnership because of the implications that we've talked about all last week. And even though if the political intrusion or involvement is something that's not going to be the case, reassert that. Make sure that that's clear that this is a separate sports network and none of the influence that Sinclair exerted with its 191 news stations is going to be prevalent or obvious or even noticeable with the Cubs. The biggest thing, though, is you have to apologize again for your father's emails and Joe Ricketts' anti-Muslim email revelations were disturbing, and we haven't heard from Tom Ricketts since then. We've read statements, and we've done everything that we've heard from people associated with the Cubs, but we've not heard from the son, and you need to hear from him directly, and don't say that they were racially insensitive emails. They were racist emails, and you have to distance yourself from them as much as you possibly can. He is your father, and everybody loves their dad, and everybody's always going to love their dad. Nobody will begrudge him that, but you have to make clear that Joe Ricketts has nothing to do with the Chicago Cubs, and you have to distance yourself as much as possible from these emails, which are just unacceptable from a patriarch of a family or head of any organization. And then the last thing, before you go, you just have to remind people, okay, it's time to play ball now. Baseball has to take center stage at some point in spring training, and after today, that's when it starts.
I agree with everything you said. I would add, just be genuine. Be the same guy that Cub fans see when they walk into Wrigley Field and you see Tom Ricketts in his W windbreaker, shaking hands, talking to people, and expressing real interest in what fans want around the ballpark. Be that same guy when you're at the podium today.
I agree wholeheartedly, David, with all of your points, but the main one that I was going to stress too is that you have to muddle through all of this to get back to the point of the Cubs being about baseball. The Cubs can't be about father's emails. The Cubs can't be about Addison Russell's off-the-field issues. The Cubs have to be about baseball. And really, the perception throughout this winter, I mean, all the stories coming out Cubs-related have had that negative slant. I mean, of course, with the Russell stuff and the emails, I mean, you're not going to get a positive slant out of either of those situations. But if Tom Ricketts can come out and, you know, I'll say win the press conference, but make his points and speak directly to the fans through the, you know, through the media, which is actually a great opportunity for him to kind of refocus Cubs fans on what should be important to Cubs fans, the baseball. But the Russell stuff, I mean, certainly that was a weird, awkward, not so great press conference on Friday. The Joe Ricketts emails, I'm curious to see what he comes out and says there, because as you said, David, that's his father, and like it or not, he's the one who funded the purchase of the team. Even if he is not, quote, involved in Cubs business, he is the person behind all the money behind, you know, the siblings that are running the Cubs. So very interesting stuff going on down in Mesa today.
Yeah, the message, first of all, definitely has to be number one is, as you guys already brought up, the whole Joe Ricketts email situation. David, you brought up the language that Tom Ricketts used. Racially insensitive is not strong enough, which is what he initially said. And he ramped it up to what you should call them, racist emails in a statement the next day. But yeah, that's number one.
Still want to hear it from his voice, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you got to hear him say that. And I think that just it makes it a little bit deeper of an impression rather than reading it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, that will be a good thing to clarify the Sinclair situation, as he did with you guys last week, in terms of none of the political right-wing messaging being seeped into these Cubs game broadcasts. And as Espo just brought up, getting back to baseball is the least important issue, it seems, obviously, with everything that's come out in this Cubs offseason. But addressing his belief in this team, hey, we didn't make any moves. We believe in this unit. We believe in this team, this core, and we think you can bring us back to the World Series. That's the inspiration after addressing all of these other outside of baseball issues is going to be a major component.
Well, unfortunately, yes, the press conference is going to have to start with addressing what happened with his dad's emails. We're going to have to hear about Sinclair. We're going to have to hear about Addison Russell. But what do I want to hear about? I want to hear about Joe Maddon's future. I want to hear about that. I want to hear about
that.
Is the clock ticking on this group? Like, is it enough to keep winning 90 games? 90 games doesn't seem to be enough anymore. That we're spoiled. As fans, we're spoiled. And Tom either needs to reestablish the bar. Where is the owner's bar as far as what is success and what is failure? Unfortunately, though, and I understand why, the first three things that I mentioned are what's going to dominate the press conference, and he has to address topic number one, which is his father.
There's no simple answer to that question, David.
Did Addison Russell win the news conference? Did the Cubs hear what they needed to hear?
I think it's simple to say the answer is complicated. Right? I mean, think about it. If you read what he said in black and white, it sounds better than the way it was delivered. So, for example, when I say, quote,
that was a script.
When I say, quote, I am accountable for my past actions. I'm not proud of the person I was, but I do want to own the issue and take responsibility for the hurt and the pain I have caused Melissa. And for that, I am sorry. So he said the right things. It didn't sound that way when he was saying him, but he said the right things. Ultimately, though, you're going to judge him by his actions going forward, and that's not something that's easy to grade going forward. So did the Cubs hear what they needed to hear? Obviously, because he was in a position to have that press conference in the first place. So they heard what they needed to hear prior to him even being in front of the microphone. The other thing, though, is I don't know that there's anything that he can say that can make you feel better about the awful things that he did.
Right. The questions are, did the Cubs hear what they needed to hear? Did Addison win the press conference? I think the Cubs did hear what they needed to hear. And as far as winning the press conference, I don't know that I would go that far. But I would say this. I'd be like, not to equate it to another sport or another sort. I think he managed it. I think he did not lose it. Okay. If he didn't win it, he didn't lose it. And that was the biggest fear. He checked a lot of the boxes that you needed him to check. Look, I'm like a lot of people watching that, and I wasn't in the room, and so it's harder to kind of convey when you're not in the room. But I think we wanted more of a connection. You know, I think we wanted him to look as affected by this whole process as the most outraged fan watching. We wanted him to be maybe something he wasn't. You know, he's a natural extemporaneous speaker whose remorse maybe was more obvious than it appeared to him at the time. That doesn't mean he wasn't sorry. That doesn't mean he isn't sorry. It means he doesn't have the personality to express it the way many of us wish that he would have. And I think that's what we kind of want from our athletes, is them to be as affected by these things as we are, you know, the fans or the media people watching.
Yeah, you're looking for him to be emotional. I think you wanted to see him break down a little bit and look as though this has been an awful experience. And instead, what you got is a man who seemed robotic in delivering.
He was robotic. Yeah, it was rehearsed. It was a little too by the book. And it was like he was reading a teleprompter at sometimes. And I felt like, you know, we'll talk to Megan Malky. She asked a tough question in the room that it'd be tough for anyone to ask, especially a woman to ask and be, to cover this press conference. It wasn't as there wasn't as tight of a connection. But that said, Zach, he could have been as sincere and charismatic as we wanted him to be. And I still don't know that it would have answered the ultimate question that we don't have an answer for. Has he changed? Will he be different? Will this be something he can avoid moving forward?
Yeah, guys, I don't know that there was winning this press conference as much as it would have helped. I mean, how do you win a press conference about a domestic violence situation is beyond me. I don't know how anyone could go through that. I get, you know, the not being as robotic, not being as rehearsed in your answers. Of course he had to be rehearsed, though. He had to practice that. I mean, he wasn't going to go out there completely cold and just not be prepared. I'm sure he's had lots of time most of the offseason to think about this. I like how, you know, the way Theo phrases it is, you know, listen, we're very early in the game in this. It's the, you know, the top of the second inning or whatever inning reference he made. You know, Russell's got a lot of boxes that he has to check throughout the entire process, throughout this entire season. He still has a suspension to serve. But if he can make these changes, and that you hit it there at the end, David, the important thing here is, does he change? Can he become a better person because of this? You know, some guys, like it or not, are just not comfortable in front of the cameras. He never struck me as one of the guys in this locker room that was super comfortable with all the media around anyway. Not that he was standoffish, but he was never, you know, he's not a natural for it like some of the guys like Rizzo are in that clubhouse. So, of course, he's going to practice it. But in this circumstance, I think you just got to get through it. He did. He said the right things. Whether he means them, you know, I guess we'll find out. That's another question, because that's the most important thing.
Did Addison Russell win the news conference? Absolutely not. It's all about, Zach brought up, yeah, I wanted to see emotion. I wanted, because emotion makes you look genuine. And sure, as you guys all brought up, he said the right things. Someone wrote out a very good statement, and he practiced it, and he said the words, sure. But from the, Dustin's least favorite term, the optics of it, definitely lost the press conference, because you just did not see the emotion, and I didn't feel like it was genuine. Sure, is he sorry? I hope he really genuinely is sorry for more than just the hassle he's going through. And another thing, I'm a fan of Joe Maddon, but as it relates to how he's handling this Addison Russell thing, he's kind of losing me with this.
What did you like?
I didn't like, he's really impressed and proud of what he did and the way he handled the news conference.
Devil's advocate, Larry, what would you want him to say? He has to be supportive, right?
He has to be supportive.
He's their guy until he isn't.
But to me, Addison Russell did what he had to do. He did the bare minimum. Does that deserve a pat on the back and say, wow, really nice job, Addy? I don't think so. He did the bare minimum. He did what he was supposed to do. He did what the league mandated him to do and the team mandated him to do.
See, this is where it gets complicated. Sorry for cutting in here, but this is where I think we're all being a little bit hypocritical. Yes, I think everyone wants to see Addison Russell become a better human being, because what he did was awful. But honestly, if he is a great human being and he's an awful baseball player, you don't care about Addison Russell. So if he is a great baseball player and maybe not as great of a human being, that means more to you if you follow the Cubs than the other way around. And that's where I think we're all being a little bit hypocritical. It doesn't excuse anything he's done, because it's awful. But this is part of, unfortunately, what we deal with in sports today, is when you know things about people and when they're still on your team, man, it just puts you in this conflicted mode. And, you know, a lot of Cub fans went through that in 2016, not with Addison Russell. I think a lot of fans in Cleveland right now might be going through it with the Browns. You know, they've got one of their own, a Cleveland native in Kareem Hunt, and he makes their team significantly better if he's anything like the player he was in Kansas City. But there's video of just how awful a thing he has done in his life, and you just can't forget that.
Well, I'll close my answer out by just answering the second part. Did the Cubs hear what they needed to hear from Addison Russell? Yes, he came out, he memorized his statement, and he said the words.
You know, my issue was, what I didn't want to hear from Addy Russell going into this was that he didn't sound like a Woody doll, and that's exactly what he sounded like. He sounded exactly what I really didn't want him to say. And to Ray's point, some emotion, some unrehearsed, just speaking. I didn't feel like he was ever speaking from the heart. And good for us for 5 at 5, right? But that's a really good question. Thank you for asking me that. I mean, is that part of this? Is that part of how this, and now Addison, when they, you know, thank them, be gracious and thankful that they asked you a question that you could answer. There was no emotion. There was no emotion whatsoever. And also to Ray's point about Matt, I'm glad he brought that up. You know, of course he wasn't going to scold Addison Russell, but what he could have done was said, you know, Addison and I have talked about that. I want to talk about the guys here at spring training and how we're going to make this team better. That's how you say it. Because if anything, for those that don't think that the Cubs have treated Addison's ex-wife well, like that's another like, eh. That, to me, that was another eh at her. Like congratulating him on being a Woody doll. And that's what he was. He was a Woody doll on Friday.
It's a great question.
How should Rick Hahn respond to the news that the Padres have offered Machado an 8-year deal worth at least $240 million with possible deferrals, up the offer, walk away from the table, or do nothing?
Well, first of all, he has to wipe the cold sweat off his body because he woke up like, oh my gosh, $280 million? And that was one of the reports. The offer from the Padres has been rumored or reported, and I guess that's what rumors reports are these days, mostly rumors. Between $240 and $280 million for 8 years. That's a lot of dough. That's the last report that we have from the White Sox was that it was $175 million, which is maybe as high as, you know, over $200 million, but far less than $280. You've got to find out what the highest offer is if you're Rick Hahn, and you have to find out what's truth and what's fiction. And then you've got to, if you're in this, you're in it to win it. And then you've got to find out if you can get back in front of Mandy's people, if you can get back in front of Dan Lozano, if you can get another audience with Machado, like the Padres got a second meeting. Maybe the White Sox have had a second meeting and it's been a secret location. We're not aware of this, but you have to try to finish the job. You have to close this out. You've got to go to your closer, whoever that is, and get the final three outs of in so many words of this process. You've got to get the guy, because if you go into the beginning of this season and you go into the rest of spring training and Machado's a Padre and Harper's a Philly, you're going to feel really empty if you're a Sox fan, and really kind of dissatisfied if you're a White Sox player, official, manager, mascot, everybody.
Walk away. That would be my answer.
Walk away?
And here's why. Last year, this team was 62-100. We just spent the first segment of the show talking about how if you give a guy this much money, this long-term deal, what are the chances that a team that's been as bad as the White Sox have been, that they can't even keep the hopeful prospects of the future healthy? You saw him in Baltimore. This is what it would be like. He's not the kind of player that you sign him to this deal and he takes your organization to the next level. If the White Sox were on the verge of getting to the next level, then I'd be all in. They're not on the verge of getting to the next level, and he's not the guy.
What's on the verge? How much of a time period are you talking about on the verge? On the verge could be next year, 2020, 2021.
How do you know?
He's 26 years old.
I'm just saying that the White Sox are not at that level right now. And we saw him in Baltimore, a young team that was trying to build up just like the White Sox, and he didn't help them get any better in the standings. So why would you lock yourself in? You're not at the Phillies level. You can make an argument that if he goes to the Phillies, they're able to take that next step that they're looking to make.
Yeah.
The White Sox aren't there yet. That's why I wouldn't do it. If he comes to the White Sox, it should be at the White Sox's numbers, not because you're worried about him going to San Diego.
Well, I don't know that you can just sit there. If you are Rick Hahn and you are serious in your pursuit, which we have no reason to think that he's not, then my thought is front load the crap out of this deal, because you're reading about deferred money. The Sox have no money on their payroll right now. I mean, they're down amongst the bottom of MLB payrolls. And you show this guy the love. You've already signed his brother-in-law and his buddy from Miami. I mean, who else do you need to sign? I mean, the question now is, are the White Sox serious about getting in to whether it's a bidding war or whatever? Were they dead serious on this in the first place, or were they just hoping that they could jump in, make a splash, and if the market was weak, snag a guy that maybe they didn't think they had a real chance to snag when the offseason began? Now, I believe Rick Hahn when he says that they're in to try to get Manny here. But if the dollars keep going up, and we know, you know, the reluctancy of the White Sox to commit this kind of money and this kind of years to a guy, will they stay in the game? If that's me, and I think, like, you know, the White Sox are on the verge, call it the 2015 Cubs, where you go from really bad to, you know, making the playoffs now for four straight years. If you think you're on that cusp and Machado puts you over the top or gets you into that conversation, now's the time. You have the money. You've bottomed out your payroll. It's never going to be lower. Now's the time to go get him.
Haven't they been too open about the pursuit of him to be that insincere about wanting him?
I agree. I'm playing devil's advocate with that, David. But I mean, I don't think of all teams, too, especially if it's San Diego and especially if they're deferring money. I don't think. Do you? I mean, do you think Machado would be excited about going to play in San Diego?
I don't know. I really honestly don't know enough about him to know that.
Right, and we're saying, oh, my goodness, he's got his brother-in-law and a buddy with the White Sox. That's going to make him an excited player? They were 62-100 last year.
But they are on...
That's going to get him excited? He's going to leave a team that was just playing in the World Series, come to a team that's 62-100 after spending all those losing years in Baltimore, and he's going to be excited?
I will admit, Zach, I thought at the outset, I'm like, he's going to the Yankees. Whatever anyone else says or does or whatever, the Yankees are going to be the team. But the Yankees obviously had different thoughts because they went about their offseason signing other guys. So
yeah, DJ LeMahieu is the answer in New York. It's not going to be Manny Machado.
I agree. If the White Sox are serious about Manny and they think he is a superstar, Hall of Fame type player, then there's no reason to stop now.
Should the Sox walk away from the table? I'll answer that with a hell no. Do nothing? Hell no. You do something. This is the window of opportunity. Seize this moment. I do think Manny Machado is a player that can transform a team. I think the Orioles were just a bad baseball team. All we've heard from Rick Hahn is how he believes in these prospects that are coming up and how much of a good baseball team the White Sox are going to become. Sure, not in 2019, but in 2020, you're going to have Kopech back, Eloy up. Hopefully 2019 is a transformative year for Yoan Moncada, and he becomes who the White Sox think he is. So I think this is the window. You absolutely do not walk away. You up the offer. Make this happen. And give these White Sox fans something to be excited about, because it's been rough to watch White Sox baseball. I think you absolutely seize this opportunity.
Well, if it's not Machado, then who is it, right? I mean, is Mike Trout coming to 35th and Shields next year or 2 years?
No.
This is your shot, and I think they're too far in to just walk away. Now, well, here's where I'll agree with Zach. I don't think the White Sox are right there, right? And this is the type of move that you would make. But the problem is that this is their best chance to get a guy like this. And when you say, listen, I don't know that you have to really super outbid the Padres, meaning like you don't have to jump them by so much more. Listen, if Manny Machado wants to go out to the West Coast in San Diego, he will be forgotten about so quickly on a national level, okay? Even if the Padres are in the running for the NL West, nobody's going to care. 70% of the country lives this side of the Rocky Mountains.
He may want
Nobody
that.
Nobody cares.
That may sound welcoming to him.
Yeah. Supposedly he doesn't want the West Coast. And guess what? In San Diego, not playing base. This shortstop thing is a real thing. His best destination is 35th and Shields.
The White Sox won the World Series, and people nationally have forgotten that they did.
Right, correct.
So,
right.
I think when you look at what's realistic
Alex
going...
Alex Trebek did, too.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Jeopardy forgot the White Sox won the World Series. Think about that. But when you're on the verge, right? Like the Phillies, for example, 80-82 last year, knocking on the door of being able to transform that team. The Nationals, in all likelihood, going to lose Bryce Harper. They were 82-80, so they're going to fall back. So now you're talking about a young Braves team and a Phillies team that has pitching, that's clearly on the rise. That's where you go if you really care about winning, and you want to make a lot of money.
I don't know if you've heard
Zach.
You got
to deal with Philly fans then.
Yeah, and I don't know if you heard Zach, but Pecota says your Cubs are going to lose 82 games this year.
You know you don't care about that.
I just asked you.
Have a good night.
What was the highlight of NBA All-Star Weekend for you? Should Chicago be excited to be the next host of the All-Star Game next year?
Yes. Have you watched the basketball that's been played at the United Center over the last couple of years? That's it. I mean, if you're seeing the best of the best. And again, no All-Star Game is played competitively.
And that's if somebody watches DePaul on a regular basis.
No, but I always think it's cool. Because any moment, there's a moment where you're going to see something great. You know you're going to see fantastic slam dunks. You know, even though you may have not heard of the players that will be dunking, you know you're going to see great dunks. Mm-hmm. You know you're going to see the entire sports world descend on the city. Hollywood comes in. All the music stars that you can think of come in. It's a cool weekend, and I think the three-point contest is fun. The best players in the world will be there. It's not like football where you have to deal with third, fourth, and fifth alternates. You're seeing the best of the best, and that, I think, makes it fun.
The highlight of the NBA All-Star Weekend for me was the bounce pass alley-oop from Steph Curry to
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Antetokounmpo, right? Something like that.
The Greek freak, yes.
You know, that was fun. The game itself didn't get competitive until the fourth quarter. It felt a lot like watching the Pro Bowl at times. Maybe not as absurd as that, but it wasn't a whole lot of effort. The guys make it look so easy. I like the Dirk Nowitzki three-pointers answered by Dwayne Wade. That was fun. And for two guys who kind of had a frosty relationship during their careers, they sure have mended fences very quickly there.
You don't think when Zion Williamson has that Bulls uniform on next year and is lighting up the NBA?
Well, that's going to be great. That's going to be fun. Bring it on. I mean, Chicago needs something like that in February. And I love the new logo. They released the logo last night. Did you get that email from the Bulls? They're so proud of the new logo. All-Star 2020 with the Chicago stars and everything. And so that is something to look forward to. Will there be a Bull involved on the All-Star roster? That's the bigger question. I don't know. Maybe it's Zion.
For those that are wondering about the logo, real quick, it's a Windy City-inspired design featuring elements from the iconic Chicago flag, including four red six-pointed stars and two horizontal blue stripes, and then it's got the Chicago Bulls signature font and team colors red and black, which are also incorporated into the logo scheme. So it really it hits home. You get a Chicago flavor and you get a Bulls flavor all in one.
And I agree with Officer Mike. Thank you for that really detailed description of the logo, Zach. You really sold that one. But I agree with Officer Mike, who texted in, the baseball All-Star game is more legit.
Zach has missed his calling, interior designer, flag design there. That was a very vivid and fine description. I am excited to have it here. I mean, you hit it right on the head there when you said this is not the Pro Bowl. This is, you know, fun pageantry. It's celebrity. It's all those things converging on Chicago for a weekend in the worst time of year in this city. Lord knows we drove through it to get in here this morning. So be careful out there, by the way. But absolutely excited to have it here, hopefully. But, and here's where I immediately go off on a tangent, but I think the Bulls are going to be too good to get Zion. So why, you know, well, I digress. The tanking / non-tanking is not going poorly enough, I don't think, to get Zion. But we'll see how that drafting plays out. My favorite part of this was the whole Dirk and Wade thing. And I know they're old guys, and this is kind of their swan song. But to me, that was kind of cool. Guys that you've watched for literally the last 20 years of your life play basketball on their way out at the All-Star game.
For me, the biggest takeaway was the slam dunk contest, which was not my favorite slam dunk contest. Wasn't the best one we've had. Still wasn't better than the one Zach LaVine was involved in and won. But I'm going to say the dunk contest and Diallo's dunk over Shaq and then ripping his jersey open with the Superman shirt, I thought that was
cool.
That was the coolest moment of the weekend to me.
Did you see that Giannis says he's going to compete in next year's slam dunk contest?
Oh, I did not. Wow. All right.
It's Giannis.
Yanni. Did you hear Michael
Giannis.
Buffer? Team Yanni.
If you're trying to pronounce his name, I feel like the Giannis part is a lot easier to get right.
Right.
As an update guy, I can promise you the number of times I have tried pronouncing the last name, I can count on my one hand.
Antetokounmpo. So
yes, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis makes it easy, and everybody knows
Bulls,
who you're talking
get
about.
It right.
That's right.
Pat Hughes pronounce it?
I'm not worthy of being able to speak like Pat Hughes.
Giannis Antetokounmpo? I just want to also say that, yeah, Chicago should definitely be excited to host the All-Star game next year. Anytime Chicago is the center of the universe of one of the major sports, that's exciting. And as Zach brought up, you finally get some good basketball at the United Center.
Yeah, I think the city should be excited. I think fans should be excited. I would pick All-Star Saturday night over All-Star Sunday if I was offered a credential or a press pass or ticket to the game. I watched a bunch on Saturday. I thought that was fun. I watched it with my daughter, who's kind of into basketball right now. I thought the skills thing was cool. There was some really cool shots. Guys were way behind in the little relay race they were doing, and all of a sudden they're launching these threes. Guy from the Celtics, basically, he took a shot from like one step short of half court to win the thing.
Yeah,
and he nailed the three. That was, I jumped off the couch. The couch I was sitting on, I don't jump off the couch much anymore. I jumped off the couch. That was really, really cool. I thought the three-point contest was fun. They've got to flip the three-point contest and the dunk contest as far as like which should be like the premier event of the evening. I think that, you know, again, the dunking is unbelievable, right? But dunking something that like everybody can't, like, I feel like I can shoot a three-pointer. I can't shoot it well, but I can attempt one, right? I could try to practice and get better.
You're never going
to
dunk.
I can't dunk. I'm never going to dunk. I can barely grab the bottom of the net, let alone dunk. Okay, jumping over a legal pad is an athletic feat for me these days. So, but the three-point thing is cool. Listen, I think next year in Chicago, you're going to have Bulls at least participating in All-Star Saturday night, right? Otto Porter Jr. should be part of the three-point contest next year. Zach LaVine should
That's
be part
optimistic.
Of the dunk contest next year. Here's
he says
another
he's
thing.
Going to be.
I think that we should start a GoFundMe or a proposition or whatever that nobody from Milwaukee is allowed to buy tickets to All-Star Saturday night to see Yanni dunk in the game in the Saturday
Will
night
Will he be playing smooth jazz while he's dunking, Yanni?
It's a good question. It's one that hangs out there, and it's one that we're going to have to address as we move forward, and we will do so.
What did Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid settling their collusion case with the NFL say to you? Do you think Kaepernick ever plays football again?
This was a big story Friday. This is a national story that I thought caught a lot of people by surprise, perhaps. I think that it says to me the NFL will pay a lot of money. The NFL owners will pay a ton of money not to be embarrassed. And I think they did not want this to go to trial. I felt like they did not want this to be They wanted this to go away. It was a nuisance to many of them, and they paid as much as some reports are between $60 and $80 million. I think the way Dan Wetzel put it was it's closer to $100 million than it is to $1 million in terms of a settlement. We're going to talk to Dan Wetzel at 7 o'clock. Fine columnist from Yahoo Sports who wrote a really good column on this. And I think that you have to look at what Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid, what this represents is that they were kept from playing and doing their profession and playing professional football because of a stance that they took. And I think that says that this is was a justifiable case and justifiable complaint by on their terms and give them a lot of credit. I think that we'll, over time, have a more probably appreciation or understanding of what Colin Kaepernick did and what it stood for than we do right now. He's one of those guys that's going to probably – this is going to age well, and I think he's definitely going to be one of those guys. Do I think he ever plays football again, despite what his attorney said yesterday, and the Patriots and the Panthers and a third team that he didn't identify being interested in Colin Kaepernick? I personally will be very surprised if we see him in the league again.
Well, the settlement confirms what we thought all along, the open secret that even though this guy has ability, the league had colluded from him being given the chance to perform at the NFL level. And, I heard Roger Goodell at his State of the NFL press conference Super Bowl week talking about this very issue and how he was asked about it and said, well, if a team feels that Colin Kaepernick can help that team win, there will be a spot for him in the National Football League. Well, You're telling me, just look at what Jacksonville had at the quarterback position last year. I mean, you can go through a bunch of different teams. You can't tell me that Colin Kaepernick, at a bare minimum, isn't good enough to be a backup.
He's rusty. He's going to be rusty. He hasn't played in 2 years.
What I hate, the thing that drives me crazy is when I hear people say, and because you know this is the reason he's not in the league, what's the plan? What's his plan in terms of not being a, quote, distraction? What's his plan if he's not a starting quarterback and all the stuff that he's going to bring to a team? What's he bringing? You're telling me that this is going to impact the way a team's able to perform? History's on Colin Kaepernick's side. When we look back, when your kids talk to their kids about what was right, they're going to talk about what Colin Kaepernick did.
Guys, yeah, I don't see it, even though I reported it in the update that his lawyer is saying that teams are interested. I have a hard time seeing a team signing him. It would have to be like New England, and I know Carolina was the other team mentioned. That's where Eric Reid landed. Kaepernick has been the face of this, and there's so much publicity and animosity based on the kneeling that I don't know. I mean, some team would really have to want Colin Kaepernick badly in order to sign him. But obviously, you know, they won their case. They made their point. They're going to get a lot of money because of it. I know this was not about money in any way, shape, or form, but they have proven their point, and they hopefully have made people think a little bit more about the issues that they were trying to get. You know, as politicized as this got, hopefully that came through, though.
I think, yeah, I agree, David, when you say the NFL doesn't want to be embarrassed. That's part of the reason for the settlement. And I also think that there's no way to... I think it just says to me that they're absolutely this vindicates this definitely is what Colin Kaepernick was saying all along. Is he's been blackballed. There's been collusion to keep him out of the league. You cannot tell me that now. In the past year, we've had reports that Matt Hasselbeck was called by an NFL team. Tony Romo was called by an NFL team about making a comeback.
Brandon Whedon was on an NFL team.
Exactly.
Johnson got pulled off the street.
Peterman.
Zach, you brought up Blake Bortles. Nathan Peterman. I mean, come on. Colin Kaepernick, sure, he's not a franchise-changing quarterback. He's not a franchise-changing quarterback, but he is good enough probably to be a backup somewhere. Come on.
I don't think the settlement says anything as far as that he's guilty or not. I mean, the NFL has the money to make this go away. And now after probably tomorrow, this will go away. He's not going to work in the NFL. There's no chance his skills have diminished. We talked about it yesterday. He has probably been off. He's probably been off longer. When's the last time he threw a pass?
I don't think that's
his
something.
His skills stink.
You don't know. You don't know what he's doing behind.
And he should. You know what? Then workouts? Zach, after this settlement, you know what he should do. Next week, he should be starting for an AAF team to show everybody how good he supposedly is. Because I don't care how he
Johnson
looks in his underpants, in his vegan lifestyle.
This is wrong.
His hair is bigger than his waist right now.
This is where you're just talking nonsense. Because Josh Johnson didn't have to go to any league. You know, Jay Cutler
didn't have to go to some minor league. From the backup quarterback. That's the idea. And the problem is, as soon as you bring Kaepernick in, every person that gets a microphone stuck in front of their face has to talk about Kaepernick, and nobody wants to deal with it. And he is not worth it. His skills are not worth it.
So what I will say is it's not going to go away until he gets another shot with an NFL team.
No, go to the AAF and show how great you are. You got your money. You supposedly have all the money you need to live and to be a great person off the field, which he's done wonderful things off the field for communities, for children, for those less fortunate. I will not give him crap for that, but I don't think he can play anymore.
By the way, I spent wasted a half hour Saturday at least watching the fourth quarter of Birmingham Salt Lake AAF showdown. Gotta love it. That's a 5 of 5. Okay, so what should the theme of Tom Ricketts' message to the Cubs be today in Arizona? Did Addison Russell win the news conference on Friday? How should Rick Hahn respond to the latest news on Manny Machado? What was the highlight of your NBA All-Star weekend? And how did you feel about the Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid settling their collusion case with the NFL. 312-644-6767. Zach Zabin in for Mully. It's Mully and Hall on 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.